Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. One of the legacies of the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill are the thousands of state documents generated by the state's response. They're piled to the ceiling in the Alaska State Archives in Juneau. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick took a tour of what's likely the largest repository of knowledge about Alaska's worst environmental disaster.
Yeah, without the database, we wouldn't know where any. There's just too much to keep track of. You would never.
State archivist Chris Heeb leads me through a labyrinth of stacks, row upon row of boxes from two landmark lawsuits and the state's response to the tanker disaster.
It certainly is the biggest single event in our holdings. We have about 30,000 containers. Right now, you know, we've got 800 processed cubic feet and then another roughly 1,000 unprocessed cubic feet.
Here's the thing with processed and unprocessed documents. It took a pair of archivists 2 years to go through 5,000 cubic feet of raw materials and get it down to 800 cubic feet. They eliminated duplications, items of little historic value, or documents containing proprietary trade secrets. But there's still another 1,200 cubic feet of boxes to sort. It would take a 22-foot truck to haul it away.
I really don't know what's in any of this material. We have an idea of what's in here, but we don't actually have a good understanding of what's in the boxes.
We open one of these boxes at random. Inside are tables of state burn permits, Heeb explains.
So they burned, and you can see it in the pictures, they burned the biological materials, the stuff they cleaned up off the beaches, of course, the carcasses from the dead animals. They're all oil fouled, and so you can't bury it. You have to burn it.
The Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trust Council states that carcasses of more than 35,000 birds and 1,000 sea otters were recovered. No one knows the true death toll, as many sank, but the trustee council estimates more than 250,000 birds, 2,800 sea otters, and up to 22 orcas perished. These Benal sheets of paper bear testament to the huge undertaking of disposing of these oil spill casualties. Preserving these records, Heeb said, should inform future generations to study this event and hopefully prevent future mistakes.
We're the end of the line. Here's the final documents that document these events. So how else will the citizens of the state be able to find out what happened?
30 years have passed since the tanker's grounding, but the records kept and cataloged by the Alaska State Archives and historical collections remain freely available for the public to glean what happened in the aftermath of Alaska's worst ecological disaster. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
A bill in Congress would rescind the decision to open the northernmost part of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling. Hearing about it in the U.S. House today became a debate, sometimes an angry one, over which Alaska Native people Congress should listen to. Congressman Don Young made the case that some Alaskans shouldn't have a say on the topic. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Young told his colleagues not to listen to his constituents, not to the Gwich'in witnesses anyway, the residents of the interior who were about to testify against drilling in the refuge. Young, Alaska's sole member of the House, instead pointed to the witnesses from the North Slope, the Inupiat, who favor drilling.
These are the Alaskan natives directly impacted, not the Gwich'in. That's my tribe. My wife was Gwich'in. My daughters are Gwich'in. We have a few Gwich'in that make a living out of this. By promoting something that's wrong, by saying we want to take away from their brothers, that's wrong.
Young was born in California, but his first wife, Lou, was Gwich'in. Unlike the late Lou Young, most Gwich'in leaders ardently oppose oil development in the Arctic Refuge. They say it could disrupt the migration and calving of the porcupine caribou herd that is central to their culture. Congressman Young suggests some of the Gwich'in witnesses have no business talking about the culture.
It's not someone that has not killed a caribou in 10 years and probably doesn't have a license. That's wrong. Think about that when you say we want to save the culture. Save the culture of the people. Not those that are foreigners or living away from the area. These are not the natives directly affected. With that, I yield back.
Gwich'in leader Sam Alexander, who does live in Fairbanks now, wasn't having it.
Mr. Don Young does not represent the Gwich'in. He does not represent the Gwich'in in our voice.
I represent Alaska.
You don't represent the Gwich'in. I am here because the elders have sent me to be here, so I want to be clear on that.
Alexander also rejected the frequent accusation that people like him are traveling the world, living high off the environmental groups, who will pay as long as the Gwich'in keep saying their lines.
You know, somebody's telling me I get to take a trip around the world. I got that invitation years ago. It's called the U.S. Army, when I did my three tours in Iraq. So I've seen plenty of the world.
Alexander says he paid for his trip with his veteran's disability pay, and he'd rather be home with his infant son. The Democratic bill, sponsored by Representative Jared Huffman of California, cites the caribou and the needs of the Gwich'in. It does not mention the Inupiat people of the Arctic Slope or Kaktovik, the only village inside the refuge. Their native corporations would like to drill for oil on land they own that's bound up in the fight over the refuge. Fenton Rexford of Kaktovik was angry that the bill doesn't even consider the needs and well-being of his people. Rexford says the environmental groups and their supporters want to assert their own interests on Kaktovik land.
This school of thought amounts to nothing more than green colonialism, a political occupation of our land in the name of environment.
Arctic Slope Regional Corporation Vice President Richard Glenn told the committee oil development has allowed the Inupiat people to continue to practice their culture while also providing warm homes, sanitary water and sewer systems, better education outcomes, good health, and substantially longer lives. The witnesses were passionate, but for the Congress members on both sides, there were hints that this wasn't so much about the needs of native people, but a proxy war, development versus environment. One of the biggest hints was the mispronunciations.
Bernadette Dumentif.
The motion before us today makes no mention, not one, of the village of Kaktovik or the Inupiat people.
Also, he is the chairman of the Tanana Chiefs Conference,
representing the village of Kaktovik and the Inupiat communities on the north
slope. The native village of Kaktovik. Kaktovik.
The bill to close the refuge to oil drilling could pass the House, but has almost no chance in the Senate. Still, each side says it's important to make the case, keeping the argument fresh in the minds of their political base. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Governor Mike Dunleavy says he looks forward to scheduling a meeting with the Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court to discuss a dispute over judicial nominees. That's according to a Dunleavy spokesman, Matt Chuckero. He says he does not have any detail on the potential timing of such a meeting. Dunleavy filled one vacancy on the Palmer Superior Court last week, but refused to fill another one after raising questions about the Alaska Judicial Council's process for nominating candidates. Alaska Supreme Court Chief Justice Joel Bolger, in response to Dunleavy, said founders of the state's constitution intended for a governor to appoint for judgeships candidates nominated by the council. Bolger also defended and explained the council's process for vetting and nominating candidates. Bolger also serves on the council. University of Alaska System President Jim Johnson gave his fourth State of the University address today, showcasing achievements, listing challenges, and discussing funding woes. System has been transforming through the last 5 years of reductions. Statewide administration is smaller, there are fewer degree programs offered, and about 1,200 jobs have been cut or unfilled. The one institution has three separately accredited universities and 13 community campuses. Looking at weather, 56 degrees, mostly cloudy at Juneau International Airport at last check. Forecast tonight in Juneau, mostly clear with a low around 37. And the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute has the aurora forecast tonight. It's a 4, active. Weather permitting, active auroral displays will be visible overhead from Barrow to Anchorage and Juneau.